This is Pure Decking Show 189 for Thursday. What the hell is today? September the 17th? Good Lord, where did the year go? September the 17th, 2015. I'm Morphs. This is the show about the stuff that interests me. I'm continuing this lack of show notes, so when I screw up,
no,
get over.
Sorry.
And I just heard the 3D printer get done, but that's not the point. So tonight,
known 22 seconds, and we're on premium.
Yes. So actually, I heard it get done when it was printing, so I'll worry about that in a minute. I've been fighting with it for a week. Anyways, so tonight, let me do the intro properly. Tonight, I am drinking the last of my Woodsford's Reserve, and that makes me sad because, well, I could pay tomorrow and go buy more. Anyways, you're here tonight, I think, maybe. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking water now, but it just occurs to me that I've been illegal drug free now for nearly a year. That makes me sad.
I'm terribly sorry to hear
that. You said the date and where the year is gone. I'm like, I haven't taken illegal drugs since. Holy shit. I haven't been this long sober for years.
Speaking of somebody who's been this long sober for years, Big, what are you drinking?
Hi there! I actually have bourbon tonight. It's good.
Who did you mug? Your paycheck doesn't allow for alcohol.
Some hobo. I don't know.
Did the bottle have a label?
No.
I checked the bottom. Check the bottom. If there's a little wax plug in the bottom, that may not be what you think it is.
It's fine.
What kind of bourbon do you got, Big?
It's actually a local batch called Scissortail, and it's pretty
nice.
Good, actually.
Very nice. And we also have Suave Potato. I think I almost read the broadcast box again. Suave, you're here.
I'm drinking rum and coke today.
What are you drinking, broadcast box?
Beep boop beep boop beep.
I think it's drinking the sadness 0001, that I haven't 0001. Installed Windows 10 yet. It's popped up again, and it was like, you know, you could install Windows 10 today. I could.
Yeah, I'm good.
I could. You see me not doing that? You see me not doing that?
You owe me a hard drive, Microsoft.
You kind of have to wonder how many people out there are just, like, ignoring that.
You know, it's not a lot. Windows 10 has already surpassed Mac users.
Wow.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, though. I'm seriously thinking about rebuilding the box in Linux. All the software it runs is open source. I mean, seriously, the broadcast box. All the software, with the exception of TeamSpeak and TeamViewer, is open source, but both of them have Linux ports. So, you know, I could swap it over to Ubuntu and run all the same software, and might even have the audio pipeline cleaner. I don't know. Jack is a interesting beast when it comes to routing audio around. But anyways, so just to start off with, has anybody else, because I was thinking for the discussion topic tonight would be virtual reality and augmented reality. I don't have any new stories about it, but I've been playing with Google Cardboard lately. Anybody else played with that?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. So I ordered one of the kits off Amazon. It was like $6. Because, you know, not that I don't have plenty of cardboard laying around. All you have to do is look in my upstairs second bedroom and confirm I have lots of cardboard available in the form of boxes I probably should have unpacked months ago. But I wanted to make sure I got the lenses, so I went ahead and ordered one of the kits.
Right.
And I've been playing with that. Now, I have an iPhone, so it's not quite the same because there's not quite the same apps. They have cardboard support for the iPhone, and there are apps. It's just not the same set for Android. So the biggest thing is what I had for Digital Dojo last week with the thing that lets you stream to the cardboard and emulate an Oculus on it. I found a version for iOS, but it's Wi-Fi only. You can't use the cord. And it's not nearly as good. It lags. So I'm probably going to end up building one for my Nexus tablet. But I was reading online that they're actually not as good to use the tablets because the screen is bigger with the same resolution, so you get not as good dust per inch.
Well, you know, like the Google Cardboard that I set up was on a Galaxy S3, which I think is 1280 by 720, if I remember correctly.
I've got one, but it's got a busted screen.
Yeah, well, that's my problem. I busted my screen on it, so now I can't use it for cardboard. So I've got this cardboard built for it that I can't really use, so I think I'm going to dismantle it and remake it for the Nexus 7. That's the only other thing I have. But, you know, like that's full 1080 by 1920, well, I think. So it is too. It is a higher resolution than my phone. Yes, it is bigger, but if you make it further away from the lenses...
That, yeah, that's where I was going.
Like, I don't really see, because it's a bigger screen, like, it'll end up being the same. It's just, from what I hear, it's bulky, and it's something that's not very comfortable to wear on your head for long periods of...
Well, the cardboard's certainly not very comfortable after a while, and, you know, the skin oil stain on the front of it's kind of unsettling. But I actually got on Amazon the other day and ordered it's called a Sunny Peak. It was about $20, but it's basically a Google Cardboard made out of plastic.
Okay.
With proper head strap, and the lenses are adjustable. And I was playing with that earlier tonight, watched a couple of YouTube 360 videos on it. Legendary Pictures has put up several YouTube videos of renderings and stuff they've done that's really cool. And there is a lot of Korean, like, J-pop videos or something like that. It's like,
my
that
wife
seems
was
to be...
real!
It seems to be all there is in the on the YouTube 360 so far. So maybe I'm missing something, but it's like it's like, is this it? I mean, really? But yeah, and I did watch a video where somebody had filmed it at a conference, and it's just like being there with really bad glasses. But I'm kidding on that part. But the one thing I did that was actually very cool with it was somebody had done some screen capture of playing Elite Dangerous with an Oculus
Ooh,
Rift.
That's cool.
And, you know, after tweaking the screen size a little bit, I got it lined up perfectly, stuck in the Google Cardboard. And the 3D effect was working, even though it was screen capture.
Yeah.
Nice. So, now last week for Digital Dojo, I had the Android app for VR, and I've played with the iOS one a little bit. But, I found earlier today on Thingiverse, so yeah, sorry, we're talking about 3D printing again briefly, just to mention, somebody actually put up designs for a VR for the Nexus 7. So I'm thinking I could take the lenses from the little cardboard job, since I've got the better plastic one for my phone now, and or I could get the screen on my Nexus or my S3 fixed, but I'm thinking it would probably cost as much as just buying a decent Android phone to fix the screen on the thing.
Yeah.
It's like $100 like, to get a screen fixed, isn't it?
No, it's like $4 if you do it right. But then you got to use a heat gun.
Oh, that's where you got to take the digitizer off the actual glass.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah. But you can do it for super cheap if you do it that way. Otherwise, yeah, it's over $100.
But it might be worth trying that.
But talking about watching those Oculus Rift videos, without the Google Cardboard, I've actually taken to watching those sometimes too. And you can actually get them in 3D even without the glasses. You just kind of have to do the same thing that you do for like those magic eye pictures, where you kind of just unfocus your eyes and let the images
stare
overlap.
At them cross-eyed.
And you still get 3D. It's just you can't have a very large video window because you can't make your eyes unfocus that far.
Yeah. So. I just threw in the chat there the link for the item I was talking about on Thingiverse, where you can see it's basically it says ski goggles that will hold your lenses and the tablet in place with some rubber bands. At least I thought it would hold your lenses. I don't actually... Oh, yeah, it's got the mounting of the lenses.
Okay, in case anybody wanted to look it up, it's the Zendome Stereoscopic 3D Nexus.
The link will be in the notes. And,
oh, okay.
I threw it in the IRC as well, so they can look it up if they have a printer, or if you know they want to like order it on Shapeways or something too. I guess you could do that, but because I can't find shit like just ordering something decent for
or
a tablet.
The Nexus 7, yeah,
yeah, it doesn't. It's like nobody thought to make that.
There's probably a reason.
There's probably a point where the screen size is so big and it's so close to your eyes that you can't even use all the real estate.
Yeah,
that's a point. So, but there's that thing. I may try printing that at some point. I got to get my printer running a little bit better. It's having a rough go. So I thought the new extruder I'd put together would be a good thing, but I'm not so sure about that now. So, whoops. Anyways, moving away from 3D printing. I don't know. I'm probably the only one who uses an ultra-wide screen, too, aren't I?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I'm thinking about redoing my battle station, because the ultra-wide's nice, but that resolution throws a lot of things for a loop. So, thinking about going back down to two screens and maybe using that on an audio workstation upstairs for some other stuff. So, anyways, so I guess getting on to the first topic here, unless anybody else wants to talk about El Cheapo VR, because the Oculus is going to be coming out later this year. It's like $350 right now for the dev kit.
Well, you know, I'd kind of like to talk a little bit more about VR.
Yeah, go.
Yeah, well, like, you kind of got me curious, because, you know, I was all gung-ho about the Oculus, and then they got bought out by Facebook, so I kind of just lost interest, and I'm like, well, I'll wait a year and see what comes out on the market.
Yeah.
So I just did a quick Google search here. And there are a ton of VR headsets coming out relatively soon. And it looks like there's going to be a lot of different options. And some of them are looking pretty advanced. Like, one of them has an infrared sensor that monitors your eyes. So it can actually track where your eyes are looking inside the display.
I think that's Microsoft through HoloLens, isn't it?
No, it's the Fove VR, they call it. And... they can use this to simulate depth of field, like based on where you're looking. So like what you're looking at is in focus and other things aren't.
Well, it's probably not so much that it's not in focus as in it's rendering it at a lower resolution. So your graphics card doesn't have to work so hard.
Yeah. Something, but either way, that's pretty damn cool. Just to really get those like really immersive effects and stuff like that.
Well, I'm just wondering if these VR headsets get good enough. Can you get to the point where like I've got 5 feet of monitor in front of me right now, right?
Yeah.
And that's fun, but I'm having problems with the ultra wide. I'm kind of wondering at what point will I be able to buy, you know, an Oculus or what'd you call that one? FOV?
Yeah. Or FOVE.
One of those heads up displays like that and just, you know, like have a utility screen in front of me for launching stuff and then, you know, put on the headset and have the environment.
Oh my god, hackers is real.
I want a helm chair. That's actually what I want, is just a fucking helm chair.
I actually kind of want to build one of those for Star Citizen. But, yeah. You know, the problem with VR right now, and it's very, very obvious when you play around with the Google VR or the Google Cardboard, is that there's just no software out there. It's all like just thrown together garbage. Nobody's really had any time to develop anything good. Or
well,
the hardware isn't there to deal with it.
That's not true. That's not true. I did find an AR game, or VR game, I should say. I was looking for some AR stuff, but all of it just looked like stuff that'd make you sick. It's like, it's AR with the Google 3D or Google Cardboard, and all we do is flip your screen upside down or invert the colors or some other bullshit. Yeah. And it's like, flip the screen upside down. That's great. Watch me die as I trip over all the shit in my house. Anyways. It's called Vanguard V. I don't know if you've played that one or not. But it's a 3D rendered, and you're flying through space, and you steer by looking around.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And the rendering's decent. At least I'm using an iPhone 6 right now, so I mean it ran fine on there, looked decent. And you do get true 3D, like the stuff coming at you is rendered, and it's really obvious on the targeting reticles though, because those are kind of floating on top of everything else. So, you know, it does work. It's not perfect. It's certainly not fantastic. And most of the apps are just stupid. There was one that renders a 3D environment, including people sitting around you, which look like, you know, bad Second Life models, to put you in a movie theater so that you can watch the videos on your phone in a movie theater in 3D.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was the dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, what the fuck?
Or there's a skydiving one, and there was probably about 6 polygons for the entire landscape.
Right.
And that's being generous.
Well, I mean, I've been getting a kick out of some of the 360 videos just because it's kind of unique how you can kind of look around and see all the views of a video. There's just not that many of them, and like I said, a lot of them are like kind of like, why would I watch this?
Well, you but, know, like those types of videos, they don't really make sense for a lot of situations because, like, anything really entertainment, like it's framed and set to be to like really evoke you. And just having something where you can see all angles all the time, you don't have the skills to actually set up a good frame and a good shot and everything like that. The sort of stuff that really evokes emotion and yada yada yada. So you're gonna have a much lesser experience. Where it would be useful would be like news clips from like protests and riots and stuff like that. Like that would be awesome.
Run around and you know see every. Yeah, what you really need is to be able to move around in the shot as well. And that's hard.
So, okay, so when are we going to start seeing quadcopters with fisheye lenses that stream to a VR headset?
I don't know, but I kind of want to build one now.
I guess you need dual fisheye lenses.
Well, I mean, some of the rigs I've seen for shooting these is like where, you know, you get like 12 GoPros and make a big ring out of them.
Oh, God.
And then the other method I've seen to do it, which isn't, you know, doesn't get as high a resolution, is you get like a high resolution camera and a silvered dome, and you point the camera at the dome.
Yeah.
And it's you turn the whole thing up, so the camera's actually facing up. But yeah, the way the dome reflects, you get the distorted image you would need to get a 360 view of the room, and then in software you can turn that back into, you know, your view. Because it kind of stretches it back into a flat view, and you can look around it.
Right.
But even then, those are, you know, like distorted and not all that good. So the equipment is not cheap to make these kind of things. But you know, to your point about, you know, having the video is kind of interesting, but not really all that useful. Like I watched two videos on it earlier today, playing with this. What is this? This is a Sunny Peak plastic Google Cardboard, basically. And just because the cardboard is kind of crap and already falling apart, so I thought, well, I like playing with this. I'll go ahead and get the plastic one because if I want to see if I can get the screen streaming working better. Because whereas it won't do the head tracking, I wonder if you could, you know, use some of the other. There's lots of software out there for just streaming a copy of your screen to your phone. So you know, if you had like a video that was done in stereoscopic. Or if you could trick a game into rendering in stereoscopic, because there are filters for that, where you can like run a program and that'll trick the game into rendering like it's a stereoscopic. So I wanted to play with that. And so the first one I watched was, you know, shots from like a Gen Con. And they were mostly focusing on cosplay, but they were also looking at some of the exhibits and stuff like that. That was kind of cool because you could actually, you know, turn around and see all the views of it. And that's where I made the joke earlier. Like, it's like being there with a really bad pair of glasses because the resolution was pretty shit. But the other one I watched was, and this is, you know, why I keep referencing the J-pop, was some Korean concert, which, you know, was interesting for like the minute I watched it because the music was terrible. But, yeah, you end up facing the direction of the stage because sure you can turn around and see all the other people in the crowd, but why?
Yeah.
So like I said, you get kind of bored of that, and then it's like, okay, well, I don't really care about this music or whoever the hell that is on stage. Done, you know, and go on to something else. So.
But once again, that's kind of the fixed viewpoint. If you know, if for somehow they were like doing like a 3D scan of the entire environment or whatever, and then reconstructing it for you to walk around. Be pretty cool. You go up on stage, you know, that sort of stuff.
It'd be badass to be able to explore it after the fact.
Yeah,
but how creepy would that be if you're in an area, you know, warning, 3D capture in progress, don't look through your phone, you might go blind from all the infrared that'd be bouncing around to capture everyone's location.
Yeah,
because it would have to capture you, scan you, generate a 3D model of, you know, a passable 3D model of, you know, everyone there and the shape they're in. Now, you wouldn't necessarily need like proper rigging and animation. You would just, you'd do frame by frame. It would just be 3D model.
Yeah, you just capture a point cloud and then apply the photo texture.
So it would just move from, you know, point cloud to point cloud as opposed to being actually rendered, but you'd be able to move around in it, I think.
Yeah.
So cool. We just invented the next great thing.
Yeah, go us. And you know, as soon as somebody starts saying, "Hey, we're scanning the entire room, don't move," someone's gonna whip their dick out.
Oh yeah.
That'll be the trick, right? You go into these 3D environment videos.
It's like, where's Waldo? Find the penis.
Yeah, and, you know, because you think about it, if you're doing this kind of thing where you've got this, you know, some kind of a scanning grid, it would have to be, you know, rigged up and like scanning a room, right?
Yeah.
You know, like you'd have the room or the stage or something like that where you have the full environment and you can move around in it. You know, they're not going to be able to control each and every little thing going on in that kind of a capture environment, and it really will be the game of, you know, find find the thing that went wrong.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I was reading some other articles earlier that they're talking about when rendering gets good enough that instead of hiring actors to make movies, they'll just render them. And, you know,
well, they're already doing
voice actors.
That.
Well, I know they're already doing that, but I mean, like, you know, the home version. Go ahead, Ari.
Pretty much most CGI nudity now is CGI. Sorry, most nudity is CGI. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, imagine the version where you're watching Lord of the Rings and you can actually go down into warning, do not. Oh, are you?
Imagine just we could walk into Helm's Deep though, and like
that's
go through
saying.
Every level.
Now, now think about this though. It's all rendered, right? So you'd have the kind of the Skyrim mods effect. It's like Lord of the Rings, where every actor has been replaced with versions of Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger from various versions of their career.
Yes! Yes!
As long as it has the voice synthesis to go with it.
Oh, that would be amazing. Can you imagine what the things you could do with movies? Movies are going to be a totally different thing.
I cannot do a good Arnold.
You shall not pass!
That's horrifying.
Conan standing there in the little walkway against the Balrog.
No.
Imagine what this is going to do to porn.
I'm pretty sure porn's going to drive. Pretty sure porn's going to drive the whole industry. What was it like 2 years ago? We saw like the VR with a jack off robot. It's only going to get better from there.
So, continuing the world's decline into a cyberpunk novel. So, let's get on the first story here. This is actually the link I threw in the chat back a while ago. So, where VR newest? Ooh, I'll look at that in a minute. So, this is from the Daily Cause, which I don't normally use as a source, but I didn't see this anywhere else. The Missouri legislature, which exists as a supermajority Republican held both the Senate and the House, closed out their veto session with a rebuke of the governor, blah, 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 they don't like it. So they passed several bills. And the one that's a problem is HB 878. And pretty much the text from it that matters, because I'm trying to parse this here because it's all very much Republicans suck, we hate Republicans, Democrats are gods. You know, it's the Daily Cause, what are you going to do, right? But I normally try to stay away from the politically biased sources one way or another. But the problem here is the authority and jurisdiction of a corporate security advisor shall be limited only by the geographical limits of the state unless the corporate security advisor's license is recognized by the laws or regulations of another state or the federal government. Basically, in Missouri, private security firms are, they have the power of arrest. Companies can hire private police forces.
So, Snow Crash.
Snow Crash, yes.
Yep.
Damn. Hey, and, note to self, stay away from Missouri.
You know, I mean, that's just like, you know, holy shit. So, yeah, we're, you know, here come the private police forces. And
it's going to save a lot of taxpayer money.
But like,
that's how they're framing this. You know that. It's a test trial in Missouri. This will get rolled out through the entire, I'd like to use the word freedom, but United States. And soon they'll make a justification that police forces need to be private because we can't control our public ones. They're behaving that badly that we're dissolving them all. You didn't see this coming down the pipe?
I think this is the testing ground, though.
I didn't even think about the whole, you know, our police is terrible, they keep shooting unarmed black people, we need private ones. That's a good angle. I didn't even think about that one.
Yeah, I've been all Alex Jones in this for fucking couple of weeks now on, like, why are they just letting this go? You know, there's bad PR and there's no counter.
Why not privatize the police force? I'm all for running the government like a business. Why not just, you know, expand that and run all of the services like a private corporation? Why not?
Oh, that'd be more efficient.
Great idea.
I don't necessarily think it's the testing ground, though, because in Seoul, Samsung basically has a mini town. Like, right in the middle of town square, they've got a couple blocks to themselves, just Samsung buildings everywhere. They've already got that. They've already got their little police force and shit. I don't think this is a testing ground so much as a continuation of that kind of shit.
I think it's one thing to have a security force, i.e. like security guards and stuff like that. But when you give them like the powers
the power
to like seize property and arrest you, that's a huge fucking deal.
Yeah. You're giving that to a private company? But that's how they'll spin it.
And to be fair, like, everybody has the power of arrest. Like, if you see somebody breaking the law, you can do a citizen's arrest. But you can't, like, seize property and, like, this is going to get abused all the fuck.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I generally do, you know, side on the side of, you know, private companies doing things. And the only problem I have with this is, well, are they going to have an open free market for police force? Because that might be okay. Or are you going to see what you see with communications markets like the cable company and the cell phone company? Because we all see what happens when you contract out and give companies, you know, basically functional monopolies in a region with agreements with government. You know, how many... There was like some like 200,000 or something. Well, maybe one of them. It was at least 2,000 FCC complaints and BBC complaints against Comcast this year or something like that.
I, for one, I'm looking forward to living in the areas that are deemed unprofitable for company police.
Go ahead, Suave. You're sputtering.
Yeah, the whole thing about this private police force. You know, you're saying, oh yeah, well, if it's a free market, then it'll be fine. But no, if it's a free market, then only the people with lots of money can afford to have protection. Or, like, only the people with lots of money can control the police force. And you know how that's going to result. What do you think?
I don't think that that's true.
The average guy is going to be able to outbid, you know, fucking the local corporation or whatever?
No, but and, you know, like, I don't you're gonna think see it stuff would be like, set up like that.
It'll be trickle-down policing.
You know, like, stuff like this, like, if you've got corporations who can now run their own private police forces, what happens when there's, like, protests and stuff like that? Or, like, you know, like, those guys who, like, went and put, like, the fake body bags in front of the tobacco building or something like that, they're going to get their head stomped in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, for one, as I said, look forward to living in an area where it's just not profitable to police there. Think about it.
Well, I'm thinking more you're going to see, and this is why I made the Comcast analogy, is because of the argument you're saying right there, is you're going to be like, well, you know, obviously you can't, you know, have a private company where people contract individually. You might have companies that do their own contracts for, you know, their areas, but you'd think the city or the county would contract to a company for the policing locally. And then so it you know, you'd be paying a tax bill, and then that tax bill would go to the company that runs the police force. So whereas it's not so much that you have to outbid them, you just have to deal with the fact that you have, you know, zero say in the way they act. And you have to
all
deal with them like
your
Comcast.
Judge Dredd style of policing.
Oh, yes! Or think about it. What if the government just decides we're not going to renew contract for this particular company, and then they're in a state where they're trying to find where they can get another police force for 6 months. What the fuck?
That brings a whole new meaning to secret negotiations. It's like, no, it has to be secret because we'll be arrested by our own police force if we're not. You're being charged with sedition? Wait, what?
Wow, this is just turning into Gotham.
Or maybe it'll just get to the point where if you don't have police insurance, you don't get police protection. Call up 911. Help, I'm being robbed. What's your insurance number? I don't know. He just stole it. Well, fuck you.
It's going to be 2 to 3 days before we can get an approval to come out to that robbery.
Yeah.
Just like any other business. Like, yep, we'll take your money right now. Oh, you want a refund? Yeah, that takes 6 to 8 weeks to process.
Yeah. And a 15% paperwork charge.
Huh. All right. Next story up. This one is from Ars Technica. China is telling U.S. companies they have to sign a cyber loyalty pact. Let's see. As China's president, Xi Jinping... Wait, really? Is China's president really named Xi Jinping?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm not being racist. That's actually what it says.
Yeah.
Okay. Prepares to visit the White House next week. The head of China's Cyberspace Administration, Liu Wei, is holding a summit with U.S. technology companies in Seattle. There, he's expected to further press U.S. technology companies operating in China to sign off on a pledge they will comply with Chinese information security policies, potentially giving Chinese authorities direct access to user data. The terms of the pledge, which the New York Times reports requires companies to promise they would not harm China's national security and would store Chinese user data within the country, are similar in ways to the prison agreement between technology companies and the U.S. government revealed by Edward Snowden. Excuse me. The pledge also goes further, pressing these systems to be secure and controllable, suggesting that these companies may have to provide direct backdoors to systems for surveillance and provide the Chinese government with source code to their applications. The pledge document begins, "Our company agrees to strictly adhere to two key principles of not harming national security and not harming consumer rights." Much of the pledge document is focused on user privacy rights, outlining policies that would give the users the right to know where their data was stored, control how much of their personal data was collected, and to opt out of collection policies on personal data, and to choose to install, uninstall, or uninstall non-essential components, and not to restrict the user selection of other products and services. This is sounding less like prison. The pledge also asks companies to guarantee product safety and trustworthiness by taking measures to build security into products, rapidly patch vulnerabilities, and not install any hidden functionality or operations a user is unaware of in the product. So stop and think about this. This story is billing this agreement as prism-like and giving the Chinese government rights, you know, to go in and look at all this stuff, and I'm sure it does. But at the same time, it's like, oh yeah, and you got to fix your shit, and you can't spy on our people. And,
yeah.
You know, so... I'm kind of both ways about this.
Yeah, like looking at what they've said, you know, I'm sure that, you know, you have to store it in China's, within the nation of China. Like, obviously, they're going to be looking at this data. But at the same time, it looks to me like they're putting a hell of a lot more protections out there than you're seeing in any Western countries.
So, let's see. Oh, right. And then the final part. Finally, the pledge would require companies to agree to accept the supervision of all parts of society.
Ooh.
That's in quotes, so I'm assuming it says that. Including third-party evaluation of all products to determine if they are secure and controllable to provide compliance with these commitments. Yeah, and that's the one that has everyone losing their mind.
Well, yeah, because like that's one of those things that they like to use like when shit goes wrong so they can just arrest CEOs and, you know... put a bullet in their head or whatever so they can say they did something.
Yeah.
More than we do
like,
here.
You know, like those global rules, like accept the supervision of all parts of society. How can you possibly pledge to do something like that?
That just basically means when the government says they want something, you know, click your heels and bend over.
And it's like, well, and it's so vague that it could really apply to anything. So... like, yeah, they put in all this great stuff, and then they just put this caveat at the end. It's basically like, yeah, we can tell you to do whatever.
No.
Yeah, that's doing business in modern China for you.
It's just interesting that they have all these modern consumer protections, but then they're like, but we're not subject to that. We get to see everything. So, Interesting. Next story up, this one is, well, the Adblock Wars have started. iOS 9 came out. I don't know that anybody else cares, but apparently the top apps in the App Store right now are all Adblocks, because Apple has finally let up and letting apps communicate with each other, so you can actually put together add-ins for browsers and shit like that now on iOS.
Okay.
And, yeah, so Adblock is like the top thing in the App Store right now. And in fact, I have my phone here. Let's just see. I'm going to go into... I actually... It's kind of stupid, I know, but I went ahead and did the iOS upgrade earlier today. So let's just see. Top charts. Categories. All categories. The top two items in the paid category are Peace, Block Ads, and Trackers, powered by Ghostery. And Crystal. Block ads faster.
Don't block awesome. Them quick enough.
And then the top, let's see what the top three are. Pop the Lock, so looks like a game. Snapchat, Messenger, okay, that's making me sad. But I was hoping for more, like a free ad block up. Yeah, the Kylie Jenner official app is number four. That's just kind of... I should put this away, it's making me sad.
What? Why does it have an app? why does it have an app? Is it to control its robotic fake tits? What the fuck?
Thank you, Ben.
I lost what we've been talking about.
We're talking about Facebook blocking... Okay, Facebook is preventing people running Adblock from seeing messages.
Yeah.
So, the story is on grasswire.com. A Facebook change has prevented some users from being able to access their messages from within Facebook.com. Numerous Facebook users complained on Twitter and elsewhere that the social network was blocking access to the messaging features when they viewed the website with ad-blocking software and plugins. A Grasswire editor confirmed that messages on Facebook.com were unavailable with ad-blocking plugins enabled, with messages returning only after the plugin was disabled on Facebook's domain. Facebook's browser-specific messaging website, Messenger.com, and its mobile apps are not affected by the issue. It was not immediately clear if the issue was deliberate or a result of a glitch. Yeah, what do you think? Glasswire has reached out to Facebook for comment. If deliberate, it would be the latest move in online service to restrict portions of a website to users who disable advertisements. I mean, it makes sense because Facebook is an advertising company. Google is an advertising company, right? People forget this shit. You know, most of these social networks, most websites are not, you know, whatever they're proclaiming themselves to be, savers of humanity, managing your friends, telling, you know, validating your worth by allowing you to post pictures of what you've eaten that day. I actually talked to a guy at work who was seriously considering starting a Twitter account to take pictures of his shit.
Oh, God.
He's the Twitter shitter.
It was going to be, look what I did.
That's actually kind of genius. Oh.
So, you know, never minding how vapid it is.
I'm guessing it was probably more in parody of all of the other stuff going on out there. Hey,
it is, but, yeah. You know, he's also crazy enough he might actually do it. But more likely he'd go get a collection of images off of, you know, 4chan or something and just write a script. But anyways, yeah. lookwhatidid.com.
You know, like... You know, it sounds like it's only doing this to some users, so it might be like a test case to test, you know, see how much backlash they get or something like that. But even if they rolled it out for everyone, can't prevent people from doing what they want to do. It'll last, like, anything like that, I guarantee it ever lasts for, like, a week before they have to change it again.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like any, pissed. Like... DRM policy or scheme that's out there, like, you know, the new Photoshop comes out and it's like a week and it's on all the pirate sites even after they've fucking spent, like, you know, millions of dollars coming up with a new DRM scheme, and it takes like one guy in his basement a weekend to break it.
That must be like the most depressing job ever, would be a DRM programmer. If you had a clue, if you actually knew what was going on, that would be like the most soul-crushing job, because you have a boss who's like delusional and thinks that this shit's going to change the world and they're going to invent the next stage of DRM. And you're just sitting there going, no, reality doesn't work that way. But it doesn't matter because they're the boss and they pay the bills. And then, you know, it's you know, no, Morbs, really, we don't need password requirements because we're going to do monitoring. I mean, I'm not projecting. I'm sorry, I'm not projecting. I forgot.
Yeah, that will be fine. Nothing can go wrong.
Next story is from, this is all over the place, but I actually got it from texas.edu, and I just found it amusing that I found it on a university news page. Android, the latest version, 5X, has a lock screen bypass. And it's not even anything fancy. Basically, the vulnerability exists in any version of Android 5 before 5.1.1. That allows the attacker to crash the lock screen and gain full access to the locked device, even if encryption is enabled on the device. By manipulating a sufficiently large string in the password field, when the camera app is active, an attacker is able to destabilize the lock screen, causing it to crash to the home screen. At this point, arbitrary applications can be run, or ADB developer console can be enabled to gain full access to the device and expose all data contained wherein. Basically, you put a retardedly long string in the password. Like, you know, you bring up the emergency dialer and you just, you know, copy and paste it over and over and over again until it's huge. Then you bring up the quick camera app and it'll crash out. And, you know, you can, like, they actually have screenshots here. This is why I liked this article. They show, you know, getting a whole bunch of data in the clipboard, you know, and leaving the cursor in the emergency dialer, bringing up the quick camera, and then bringing up the keyboard to, like, start copy-pasting in again to the emergency call field while you have the camera up, and it'll crash out and take you to the home screen.
Pretty ingenious, whoever came up with it.
Yeah.
I just think it's great. Because like, you know, everyone talks about how important that lock screen is, you know, keeping people out of your device. Yep.
Well, sure, it's just like a lock on your door. It keeps honest people out, and that's about it.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Because, you know, nobody's going to look at the grease finger.
I'm wondering if this bit of hacking genius was discovered on the toilet.
I'm sure it was. It was just somebody fucking around and figuring out they could paste from the other, you know, from the camera. And just doing it over and over again until it crashed out, went to the home screen. Like, wait a minute. So, yeah, I love it.
No, talking about Android, I guess my Nexus 7 got an update not too long ago. So, you know, I turn it on and it's like, hey, you can now say OK Google anytime, anywhere, and your voice access comes up. But, like, basically, as long as it's plugged in or the screen is on, you just have to say "Okay, Google," and it'll you know, bring up the Google Now or whatever. But that means that it's always sending everything you say back to Google's servers because that's how the voice recognition works.
Wait, well, iOS, and I think some of the Android articles like this. I know iOS, they said that they're actually looking for the "Hey Siri" phrase on the phone.
They don't necessarily have to send out the parse for that little phrase. It's after
just
that,
the one phrase, yeah. Because it's not really looking for that phrase. It's listening for the inflections that match it. Because if you say something similar, like on iPhone, it's "Hey Siri." So what would be? It'd be like, "Hey Erie."
Hey Beery.
Yeah, that would do it. Or, you know, so if you're doing a bad Japanese impersonation.
Okay. I guess that's not as bad then.
Are you still using speakers? Are you still using speakers to do shows? Well,
no. You guys getting feedback?
No. I'm asking because if you were, I was going to say, okay, Google tentacle rape, or you know, it's pretty sad. That's the worst thing I can think of right there.
No, the second that came up, I disabled that. I just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, the whole I do the same. I turned it off on all my stuff too, and you know I could really see the appeal because the Apple one originally was only supposed to work when it was plugged in,
right?
And it's like, you know, I only plug it in at night, And I can actually see that being really useful, because most of the time I'm not saying anything, but if the phone goes off, you could just say, you know, hey, Siri, read me that text message, or whatever.
My problem with the, like, what kind of sent my hackles up a little bit when they had this, when I saw this new enhanced Google services, they call it, with full hot word and interaction. If you go into enable it, it gives you a big warning that says, this voice input service will be able to perform always-on voice monitoring. And, like, that just seems really generic and all-encompassing.
Well, that is how it works. I mean...
yeah, but, like, I don't like that.
You know, people buy the Amazon devices.
I'm sure, like, disabling it
does
nothing.
All it does.
Yeah, the fucking Echo thing.
I mean, people want this shit. Hell, iOS 9, when I upgraded that today, it like, didn't even give you a choice. It's like, we're not using your iCloud account. Congratulations. And I'm sitting there trying to turn as much of that crap off as I can.
Yeah.
You can't completely disable it anymore. They took the Windows 7 or Windows 10 approach of, oh, you can turn it down. Can't turn it off. And it's just getting stupid now with all the cloud monitoring shit. It tried to force me to put a credit card into Apple Pay. And you have to back out and go back into it before they skip this step. And it's not even skip this step. It says, I'll do this later, comes up.
Oh, so it's going to bug you now to the day you die.
Yeah.
Great.
Can we even unironically, without joking about it, say, this is the year of the Linux desktop next year? Not this year. This year's almost over. Next year.
Well, you know, if enough people look at what the hell's going on with Windows 10, it really may be.
Well, I think for the techies who are somewhat turned on.
Yeah.
People like us care, but your mom and dad really care? I don't think
they
might.
No, they don't. And
no, and it'll never be the year of the Linux desktop for the people like that. They're just going to die eventually, and then they'll stop using Windows.
We got a guy at work who's in his 50s, and I'm pretty sure that the only reason he has a job is he has, like, dirt on somebody. Because he doesn't do shit. Like, literally,
I like this guy already.
Like, he sleeps at his desk and his boss walks by laughing about it. It's like, yeah, he's got like fucking dirt on somebody or something. Because there's no way he should still have a job. You know what I mean? Kind of some of the shit he pulls.
I want that job.
This is the guy who said happy 9/11. I told you guys that story the other day.
Yeah.
I'm actually not even comfortable doing that one on the show. So it's like... Like, but in a company environment, he yelled it all at the top of his lungs. So, it's just kind of like, holy shit. But I was talking to him about the Windows 10 stuff, and he was like, oh yeah, it's fine, I'll turn it on. I'm like, why? Well, they're already collecting it all anyways, I might as well get the benefits of it.
Right.
Well, like, what's it matter? Let them. I don't care. And I kind of like the idea of running bots to fill all their analytics with bullshit. So.
Yeah. That's probably going to be the next big thing.
So, next story up is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Kilton Public Library in Lebanon, New Hampshire, is not unusual in its commitment to the freedom to read and privacy. That commitment was shared by libraries all over the world, and is written in the basic character of librarianship through documents like the American Library Association. I wasn't aware that they had a Hippocratic Oath for librarians, but... I guess. Anyways, what's exceptional about Kilton, though, is that it was selected by the Library Freedom Project and the Tor Project as a pilot location for a program to install Tor relays and eventually exit nodes in public libraries all over. So, to summarize here, what happened is Kilton set up a Tor exit node as part of this project. After the effort has attracted some powerful critics. Just days after Kilton announced its participation in the program, a regional Department of Homeland Security office contacted the local police to spread FUD about Tor. The police got in touch with the library board, who suspended the program until they could vote on September 15th. So pretty much the Department of Homeland Security called the local cops, and the local cops put pressure on the library not to install a Tor node.
Wow.
So... Now, that said, there's an update to the story. that the Kilton Library Board has met, and after hearing from Tor supporters in the community and the 4,314 people who signed the EFF petition, they have opted to reinstate the library's Tor relay. So, but they're seeing the public pressure here, but like the government actually intervened and tried to prevent them from setting up a Tor node, which is interesting because the government runs tons of these things.
You know, it's easy to forget about libraries. I probably haven't been to a library in like a decade now or something like that.
Sure.
But, you know, like whenever it comes to like privacy shit like this, libraries are, and librarians are some of the first people to stand up in arms. And they really deserve our support for doing things like that. Because, you know, like libraries are all about just like freedom of information. Like that's what a great cause. And it's really too bad that they're kind of falling by the wayside. And I think that they do deserve our support. And I think that they can stay relevant in today's world. You know, things like setting up Tor exit nodes is probably, you know, like a really great step in the right direction.
Well, Tor itself as a protocol
is
exactly what they bill it as. It's fairly secure. It's good at anonymizing. The Tor network, as you know, the Tor darknet, so to speak, is pretty well compromised, and that's because they've been going nuts trying to do it. And the fact that they stepped in and tried to prevent a new Tor node from coming up makes me think they're running most of the existing ones.
Right. Yeah, they want full control.
That's how you attack the onion.
No, don't they just need like what is it like more than 50%? They need.
I don't remember the math on it, but it was actually less than that. I mean, if you control a certain percentage, you can, because you're likely to get traffic from most Tor users at that percentage, that you can probably do correlation and, you know, at least get an idea of who's talking to whom.
Gotcha.
So, considering it was originally funded by the Tor and the Navy, and the NSA funded a lot of the development of it, it wouldn't surprise me to learn that they control most of the Tor nodes. And the ones they don't control, they probably got backdoors in through other means. Of course, they cheat. They don't actually have to, you know, crack passwords and guess. They just show up with a national security letter.
Yeah.
In my mind, that's cheating. I mean, you should at least have to do the work if you're going to pwn a server, right?
I think
absolutely.
So. I'm not allowed to do it. I can't just show up.
Yeah, I mean,
I have to work for it.
You know, if you're going to show up and ask for access to a server, you got to pretend to be somebody who they'd give it to. I mean, you know, that's an extra step. Why can't I just show up with an NSL, you know, or, you know, national security letter and you know.
I want all the information on the servers. Why should we give it to you? Freedom of Information Act! Doesn't work like that. No, I found out the hard way.
When did you arm your private security force with guns? The moment Minnesota passed that law. Fuck!
Yep.
All right. Next one up, this is actually a Reddit post. It's on our privacy. And let me get the link into the chats here. So, hope Psychros and Iron Angel appreciate that I'm throwing the links out early. Although they're not saying anything, so I don't know if they're listening. Anyways, you know, our IRC chat room of four there.
Better than one.
Yeah, and I guess that's what happens because I took like a 3-month hiatus or whatever it was. So ABG has just updated their privacy policy. And I'm using the Reddit post because they have a lot of nice summarizing. So what information do you collect that cannot identify me in ABG? You know, we collect non-personal data to make money from our free offerings so that we can keep them free, including advertising IDs associated with your devices, browsing and search history, including metadata, internet service provider, and mobile network you use to connect to our products, and information regarding other applications that you may have on your device and how they are used. Sometimes browsing history or search history contains terms that might identify you. So, you know, if you search for your name, if we become aware that part of your browsing history might identify you, we treat that portion as personal data and we'll anonymize this information.
Bullshit.
You know, because research has proven that that works. You're right. We may also aggregate and or anonymize personal data we collect about you. For instance, although we would consider your precise location to be a personal data if stored separately, if combined with the locations of our users into a data set that could only tell us how many users were located into a particular country, we would not consider this aggregated information to be personally identifiable. Yeah, they have to detect it to remove it. So you know that data is still floating around in there. And privacy new, do you share my data? Yes, the when and how we share it depends on whether or not it is personal or non-personal data. AVG may share non-personal data with third parties, and we may publicly display aggregate or anonymous information. Under what rights do I have over my data? You have the right to opt out or of the use or collection of certain data, including personal data and non-personal data, by following instructions. That link takes you to instructions on how to opt out of their newsletter. Nice. Privacy preferences, you know, not getting a newsletter. So, apparently it's not even new. They just clarified it on their website, and it turns out Avira is not that different. So the free antiviruses are spying on you just as badly as everybody else.
Yay! Yeah.
Kind of expecting to spy on you worse than so just the same as everybody else.
One more reason to go to Linux. Pretty sure Clam AV doesn't spy on you.
Clam AV wouldn't know how. Sorry, Clam AV is a good product.
It's pretty basic.
I have problems with it, but You know, honestly, I need to look into it again, but, you know, I've ran Linux full-time before, and you just run into shit that don't work.
Right.
And, you oddball hardware that just has no Linux support whatsoever, or games that won't work, or Wine isn't doing the job. And there's some interesting stuff with modern chips with virtualization software where you can do PCI pass-through. So you have to put two video cards in your machine, but one goes to your VM, one goes to the primary OS, the Linux OS, and that way you can run a Windows VM, and it ends up running like a separate computer though. So it's strange to do it that way. You end up like needing a KVM to switch your keyboard, mouse, and one of your monitors over to your Linux or to your Windows VM, and it's almost like, shouldn't I run a separate computer at that point? But if you can wrap Windows up in a virtual machine where it belongs and run something else as your primary OS, you really should consider that. So, the Woodfords is gone. I'm sad. In case you couldn't tell. Big banks consider using Bitcoin blockchain technology. Don't care. Scientists can now control brains using non-invasive sound pulses. Yeah, we're talking about that story. This is from motherboard.com. And again, the TeamSpeak bookmark bar comes up. Why does that keep coming up every time I try to paste something? One of the most important biological discoveries of this decade has been optogenics, or the ability to turn genetically modified neurons on and off in the body using pulses of blue light. God, that phrase right there is terrifying. We're turning your neurons on and off with pulses of blue light. You know, the blue screen of death?
Snow crash!
Wow.
We made that reference earlier.
But they do say genetically modified neurons.
Well, it gets better. The problem with optogenetics is that normally you have to cut a hole in the subject's skull for it to work. You know, you gotta shine a blue light on it. Directly. But you have an LED implanted in your head, you hit the button and feel happy. It's like, what's that? You hit the button, he gets an erection and creams his pants.
It's the pleasure button. Finally, I got it installed.
Wait, did they find the brown noise?
The LED has to turn on. What do you do when the LED burns out? I cry a lot. I mean... Optogenetics has been a boon for neuroscientists, as it has allowed researchers to watch memories being formed, turn pain receptors on and off, and stimulate the effects of drugs, and even give mice on-demand erections. I wasn't making that shit up.
Wow.
Wow. Holy shit, the, are you? We found your solution to your lack of drugs.
I know.
The technique
yeah,
is
the
not
only
yet
thing
been...
is I've got to worry about, you know, the on and off erections.
That's fine.
You know, being forced into crippling pain by, you know, the
your
set
wife
of traffic
comes home
lights.
Finds you passed out in the chair, foam coming out of the mouth, you know, 12
raging erection.
Raging erection, high as fucking shitted myself. What were you doing? I was watching Cartoon Network, flashing lights.
Okay. The technique has not yet been used in humans, primarily because it's so invasive. Optogenetics was named Nature's Method of the Year in 2010 when it was invented. So they go on and on about optogenetics here. The new method, invented by Sankrit Chansanani of the Salk Institute for Biological Studies and described in the new paper published in Nature Communications, is fittingly called sonogenetics. It should have several important advantages over optogenetics, he told me. Most obviously is the fact that sonograms are non-invasive and able to penetrate the skin and specific cell walls without harming the untargeted ones. So they figured out how to do the same stuff they were doing with optogenetics with sound. So yes, they found the brown note.
So we interesting tech.
Yeah, we speculate that the use of ultrasound as a non-invasive neuron activator can be broadly applied to decode neural circuits and larger vertebrae brains with opaque skin and intact skulls, he wrote in the paper. Secondly, it should be possible to turn several groups of neurons on and off using this method, because there are more ranges of frequencies to play with when it comes to sound than there are colors of light that are sensitive to optogenetic techniques. Ultrasound is perfect because it goes through the skin, is not scatters, maintains energy when it penetrates the skin. You could imagine sticking an ultrasound cap on somebody's head and using that to switch neurons on and off non-invasively. They're going to be arresting people for holding speakers up to their heads to get high.
They're called headphones, dumbass. No, think about this, though. What was that sonic weapon that the army made to scare off rioters and looters and shit like that?
Oh, the ultra-high frequency.
Yeah, the ultra-high frequency cannon. Yeah. Imagine hooking some of this, like, someone plugs their iPod full of this shit up to that ultrasonic cannon. They point it at some protesters. All of a sudden, they just drop their signs and they're happy. They love
what happened? Well, they form... We don't know about the protest, but they just formed a new commune, and...
Yeah, get the wrong playlist. Suddenly, they all got raging erections.
Oh, sorry, that was my private
collection. Wait a minute, what?
So, like, just scan through the rest of the story. It looks like vertebrates, you know, mammals and stuff, don't
have... They have to actually implant these, so it's not quite as crazy as...
Yeah, like, we don't have the gene that responds to ultrasound, so they basically need to get... a virus onto those brain cells to modify the genes there to add this one gene that allows the ultrasound. And from the sounds of it, they actually have to open up the skull still, or, you know, do an injection through the skull to get that virus there because of the blood-brain barrier.
Or so, manipulate the egg before implantation.
Yeah.
And suddenly we've started breeding people like this.
But, like, what concerns me is if they start developing a virus that fucks with your genes in your head.
And responds to ultrasound.
Like, and then it maybe gets out of the lab, and then, like, maybe it just turns on your rage impulse and makes you crave human flesh or something.
Sonic-induced zombieism.
This
it could
is
happen.
Awesome.
Sir, we've developed the ultimate weapon. We hit this button and people turn into zombies. Fuck.
Oh, why does this button say YouTube on it?
So, the last thing I have for tonight is pretty interesting. I have not actually read this yet, but the link is good enough on its own. This, guy who he calls himself as a 5-year noob. This is my gift to the jailbreak community. Enjoy. The iOS App Reverse Engineering is the world's first book of a very detailed iOS app reverse engineering skills, targeting four kinds of readers: iOS enthusiasts, developers, architects, and reverse engineers of other systems who are interested in iOS. Basically, it's a book on how to reverse engineer Apple software on iPads and iPhones.
That's pretty awesome.
Open source. It's free. Download the PDF. And, you know, he lists out tools, theory, practice in the book. This is, if you want to learn to write jailbreak, like how jailbreaking works, this is what you want to read. So I just thought that was awesome, and as we're sharing as part of Digital Dojo. That's all I've got tonight. It's right on time. We're at our hour. 12, final words.
Got nothing.
Very deep and inspiring, sir. Big Brother, final words.
We are living in a cyberpunk apocalypse, and we don't even fucking know it. And I just want to know, where are my cybernetic limbs? Why don't I have a blue LED? And where's my pleasure button?
They're all being held hostage by the geisha that's taking over the bar. Are you? Final words.
Bring on the brain virus. Can't wait.